Everybody, welcome to the DLF Read and React IDP podcast. This is the spot where we tackle the other side of fantasy football. I'm your host, Adam Zekas, of course known as TKT, and joining me is a brilliant man from the UK, Tom Kessingberry. You all know him and we all love him. Tonight we have some mock draft ADP data. Tom was wonderful enough, and we found some great drafters to get together and do a mock draft, an offensive IDP full-on startup mock draft. I think we went 50 rounds, which is pretty impressive for any mock draft out there. Anyone who's just mock drafting 25 rounds, child's play. Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, pal. You sort of reminded me how big it was. So we drafted 600 players. Well, actually slightly fewer, but about 600 players is pretty tricky. I'm not sure a lot of people can name 600 NFL players.
So pretty I think big. That's a really interesting way to look at it, for sure. 600 players, right? Like, we went deep into the players, and especially on some of the positions that are not deep on the IDP side of the ball. And, you know, we kind of cleaned up the offensive side of the positions as well. So really, really good data. I know you have an article coming out, probably going to be around the same exact time as this podcast comes out, I'd say. So that'll be nice, coinciding the website, fantasyleaguefootball.com, and our podcast here. So we're going to do that. Right now it's, I don't know, sometime early March. Who knows the day anymore? And the NFL Combine has begun. So we're going to start there. We're just going to give our thoughts kind of on the macro view of how we kind of view the Combine, what we look for, what we don't care about, which is most of it. And then we're going to dig into the mock draft ADP here. I don't know if you can call it ADP, but we'll dig into the mock draft and see kind of who was thought was a steal, who kind of went under the radar. And I mean, this is real data. I mean, this is using MFL ADP. This is real data. So if you're in a startup, like, this is real stuff. I was going to use a different S word, but I kept it PG.
Nice. Yeah, it was good. I've just done a sum. So if you named six offensive players, skill position, and quarterbacks, obviously, for every single NFL team, you get up to 192. So we drafted six offensive players from every single team, and then another 400 players on top of that. So, you know, okay, in your draft, certain safety might go 100 picks before or after us. Who knows? But the interesting things are the macro trends. So what can we tell about overall drafting tendencies, and how much does that tell us about what it's going to look like this offseason? That's what.
Yeah, I think so. And we'll break that down when we get into it. So let's start with the Combine. I mean, I'll let you, if you want to go on a rant, I don't know how you feel about it. I know that I, you know, I did some linebacker, looked at like linear regression of what traits are important when you're talking about having a top 20, top 12, top 24, top 36 season, any point in their career. This was a couple years ago. It was just so pointless because it all boiled down. The only thing that was statistically significant was like total tackles in college and draft capital. They're really just draft capital, draft capital, draft capital. So obviously the Combine plays into draft capital a little bit, but how fast you run the 40, you know, what's your three cone score, at least from linebackers, what I've seen was pretty much non-significant. Didn't really mean anything. Maybe, you know, I think the way that a lot of people are starting to approach the Combine is you're looking to check off boxes, right? You want it, you know, if somebody's a burner wide receiver, someone's a ridiculously fast linebacker, you know, and they run fast, well, you shouldn't be double counting that, right? So it's important just to say, okay, he's fast and he ran fast, okay, but how often are you running in a 40-yard, you know, straight line in an NFL game, right? So it's kind of like, for me, it's like, okay, that's cool. This year, I'm like barely even paying attention to it. A lot of guys aren't running. A lot of guys aren't really doing much. And I think people are kind of speculating that going on in the future, it'll just be, you know, interviews and physicals and like medical stuff. And that'll be pretty much it. Everyone's gonna do stuff at their pro day. You know, it's not as important as it kind of used to be. How do you, I really want to hear Tom's thoughts, because I'm sure he has some great and colorful things to say about the scouting combine.
No, not really. You know my point of view on this. I just don't think it's very useful. So I really like the fact that you put together a regression on it, and you're totally right. Linebacker's harder, right? Because linebacker is so hard to describe statistically. There's just very few ways to point out bad linebacker play or good linebacker play using stats. It doesn't work very well. So some things are interesting. Three-cone drill for, you know, defensive ends and some other bits and pieces. But if you look at a correlation of all these things, they're just very, very low. So if we start with any of these things, right? Something basic as, let's say, faster running backs have more breakaway power and therefore should have a higher yards per rush over their career, over the the full data sweep. And it's just not true. Those things aren't true. They do not stack up. So I was part of a chat on Twitter earlier, and some guy was going, "Oh yeah, I've always found speed adjusted three cone drill for running backs. Says, let me find some good players." And yeah, sure, there's going to be some good players that did have a good speed weight adjusted three cone drill or whatever. But overall, there is no correlation. So sure, you've proved that having a really good speed adjusted score doesn't mean you can't be a good player, but that's all you've learned. It's just useless. So I know no one wants to hear it, because everyone loves a combine. It's really exciting, and everyone sits there and talks about slows down stuff and says their own 40 times and all this sort of thing, and everyone's got a model. My model says, but that's not good. The correlations are really, really bad. So unless you can say a certain result or combination of results is really strongly shows productivity, then you're just cherry picking. So
yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And like, it kind of speaks to the film versus data like debate. It's both. It's always going to be both. It's always going to be, here are little points of data on our path to the draft, and on our path of where someone went drafted, and on our path to how many snaps they get in their rookie season, and on our path to how many targets they get or how many tackles they get, where we're kind of building these profiles on these players over time. And there's really not going to be a shining gun that says, like, he hit the 4.60 threshold of a linebacker at the thing, and now he's going to be good or bad. Like, we don't know this thing. So it's fun. I agree. It's super fun. Like, people are super into it. You know, we've had Kent Lapete from Math Bomb on Twitter. We've had him on for the relative athletic score, and you know, it's fun to have that stuff, and his cards are awesome, and the stuff he puts out is great. But at the end of the day, like, all that stuff like doesn't really correlate to anything. And there's a lot of examples of players both ways, and in a macro level it doesn't really matter, like you said. But it is fun, and fun's good. So there's really not too much that I'm like super excited to take away. I mean, obviously if somebody does something cool, has some crazy explosion scores, maybe that stuff gives them a bump up or a bump down in sort of to tier in a tier or inside of a tier, or moves them a tier on different lists and big boards and where they're going to get drafted and stuff like that. The scuttlebutt is that teams have thresholds and they need players to hit, and like, cool, they'll get drafted. Like, if they're good or bad, they're going to get drafted wherever they get drafted, and we'll kind of take it from there. And really, it is like most people who look into what makes successful players is draft capital. And I know the teams are doing the work on the scouting combine, but we can just use draft capital to determine, what that's going to be. So
yep.
That's kind of it for me.
You do raise a really good point. The one thing that athletic testing does show us, and we had this chat with Kent, is bad athletes, comparatively, they're not bad athletes. They're a much better athlete than me. But compared to the rest of their peers and competitors, if you're just a bad athlete, you're not going to play very well in the NFL. So it's really good for identifying players who aren't going to be part of that. It's not very good for identifying players who are going to be really good against the rest of them.
The one that always sticks out to me, and this was the year that actually had him on, was the AJ Epinesa year, and like, was terrible as an edge, but you moved him DT and now he's like this highly athletic defensive tackle, but in the NFL he plays edge. So it's like, it doesn't, there's like, kind of, you're saying it right, like, if you're a bad athlete, I think the chance that you become a great NFL player or a good NFL player is maybe a little bit harder, because we're talking about the best athletes in the world, basically. I think that is part of it for sure, and that's thresholds and like needing certain things. And at the end of the day, we don't know if somebody practiced for something or didn't practice for something, and they've been working on their 40 or working on their 3-cone. Like, we don't know any of that stuff. So it's really like a nice to have, cool to look at, but I don't really take a lot of stock in it, I guess.
Yeah, that's a big part of it for me. So I'm not saying that athleticism doesn't matter on a football field. Clearly it does. That makes all sorts of sense, and it is a factor. What I do think is that current athletic testing of combine and everything else that does it does a poor job of doing it, because it is such a massive industry. Michael Johnson's day job is working for a draft training company, right? All the prospects are sent out to Arizona or wherever, and they'd go and just work on their 3-cone drill all day long, again and again and again and again. So your combine is measuring the people who've had the best coaching and the most money and time put behind them, not the people who are the best athletes. And that's one of the reasons why it doesn't mean much.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, like if you're a guy who, you know, you're not going to test well, don't test or work on it. You know, and there's a lot of players who are not testing because they have the stigma around like the numbers that they're going to come out and everyone gets assigned a number and they don't care about it, yada, yada, yada. So players get hurt, players like hurt their hamstrings, players' pants fall off. You know, it's like, you don't really want any of these things happening to you as you play.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's it. I don't know. I don't see anything else on it. I think we can move over to the meat of the situation.
No, the player I always point to is Taven Bryan. You remember Taven Bryan? Jacksonville Jaguars,
yeah,
massive bust of an interior lineman.
He's
still on
pick,
the roster,
right?
Bizarrely. First round pick. And his athletic comp is scarily similar to JJ Watt. Like, freakishly similar, but obviously they're not the same player. They're nowhere near the same player. They're not even in the same league. So, you know, I don't care what your 40 times.
Yeah, it's just another feather in the cap of we don't really know anything, right? It's like maybe if Taven Bryan went to a different team, he could have been not a bust. I mean, it literally comes down to the most
maybe
flip of a coin events that create different things, you know, to happen. So it's very interesting, but again, just another data point. And I know we don't put too much stock in it, but NFL teams seem to still, but they're doing less, I think.
Yeah, they do. And if people enjoy it, then more power to you. It's definitely a lot of fun, and it's something to do in March. So if you're really into this and you've got your own model and whatever, cool. I hope you really enjoy it. My point of view is it's not worth the time. And this time of year, you can spend learning and studying and getting your head around things that are much, much more useful. So spend that time that way.
Exactly.
You do.
All right. So let's leave that there. Let's move on to our mock draft TK 2022 mock draft number one.
So we can do some more as well, right? That's the plan. It's basically, just to recap what we've talked about a lot of time, IDP, there's lots of different sorts of leagues, and everyone plays it differently, and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. But there is very little ADP, and people have got rough idea, at best, of how people draft. So the plan, I think, that we're going to try and do is put together a few different mock drafts and just have a look at them under different settings, different assumptions, all that sort of stuff, and see what we can learn.
Yep, so correct me if I'm wrong. This one is a 12th team, which is sort of like the standard. It's Superflex, which is standard.
Yep.
And True Position, which we're hoping to make the standard. And then
yep.
I'll let you, because you set this one up. So there's no flexes. It's all just positions. Do you want to...
Yeah, there's no flex. The starting requirements, which are obviously just as important as scoring, I mean, it's quite arbitrary because we're not going to play the league, right? But I basically said three each of all five defensive positions, which I'm more and more convinced is the right thing to do in 12-team leagues, and importantly, best ball. Mm-hmm. So there is a real benefit here. We're starting three cornerbacks. The scoring is pretty solid for PD, so good cornerback weeks are going to look pretty good. And there is definitely an advantage in this league to having a deep roster of edge players and cornerbacks. So those guys are worth a little bit more than they would be in others. So examples, going back to AJ Epinesa that you talked about before, in a league like this where you're starting three edges per week and you're doing best ball, all those Buffalo guys are actually pretty valuable. They're really useful players to have on your roster because Gregory Rousseau is a good player. In a start two edge and pick starters and bench players, you're going to get that wrong, and he's not very good. He's not the guy you want. But in this, he is much more valuable. So it was interesting to see what they did.
Yeah, I don't think I really factored the best ball into my drafting, and I don't think you normally would. I mean, I tend to not look at my positional needs too much. I mean, let's start there. Let's start about our approach to it.
Yeah.
You know, it is a mock draft. We try to make it as legit as possible. I mean, I do so many startups that I don't know the difference anymore. You know, everything's legit for me. So, you know, I took it pretty serious, like in terms of building an actual roster and trying to draft the best players that I could for my team. And in a league where we are going 60-man rosters, 70-man rosters, whatever, I very rarely am like, I need to have four defensive tackles. Like, I just want to take, I know I'll need some later, but I just want to get the best players and kind of exactly
just get talent, right? Yeah, and we specifically told people this mock as well. don't try and build your best roster. Just look at value. So if you've already got 3-4 quarterbacks on the roster and, you know, Derek Carr is sitting there in the sixth round, of course you snap him up rather than, you know, some random guy, because we're more interested in the ADP and the relationships rather than your roster. Having said that, you're given this big, I've drafted such a good team, but you did draft Ke'Lavon Chaisson. So
yeah, I mean, I drafted him fairly late, right? I mean, it was down there. I kind of let, you know, the IDP go a little bit. I drafted him in the 46th round, 545th overall. So no harm, no foul. I'm kind of hoping on a second team rise there for him.
Yeah, who knows? All right, should we talk about macro trends then? So the way we started off the draft, pretty unsurprisingly, was quarterback heavy. So this is going to happen in any Superflex startup you're in. So at the first round, first 12 picks, at 12 of those players quarterbacks. No real surprise there. And the second round, another 5 were quarterbacks as well. So in the first 5 rounds total, we had 20 quarterbacks go out of, 60 players. So a third of the first 60 players were quarterbacks. That's going to happen anyway. Interestingly, there were 4 defensive players taken in the first round. Now, 3 of those guys were top edges. Miles Garrett, I think we had. Yeah, Miles Garrett, Nick Bosa, TJ Watt. All right, can't really argue too much about that. And Aaron Donald. We'll talk more about that later on. But broadly, up at the top, a load of quarterbacks, a couple of super stud wide receivers. Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase went really early. Jonathan Taylor went early. And a few stud linemen. Okay? All seems fairly sensible, right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think there was a little tiny bit of confusion. Like, there's a small asterisk. People thought it was IDP only. But I think it's fine. Like, I think when you look at comparing, you know, a top defensive end and a very highly balanced scoring, I mean, they should be around the same level as the top quarterback. So I think it's okay. I think maybe they would have gone maybe later in the first round or kind of start into the second. But again, like having TJ Watt as an edge player, you know, makes his value go through the roof when you're comparing him to the Bosa's and Miles Garrett and stuff like that. So yeah, I agree. I think that looks good.
Right. And Nick Bosa. And Nick Bosa is so reliable. He's the most reliable and consistent edge rusher in the league. So in a league like this where, you know, you don't have to worry about bad weeks, then those guys got massive value. So I think so too.
I think when the next one, we won't see too much of a difference, I don't think. But yeah, I agree with you. You know, quarterback is going to be the primary position in Superflex. There's so few, like, actually good ones you feel good about. So, you know, a lot of those in the first 2 rounds and running backs as well.
Well, then running backs and receivers came in, right? So in especially round 2, 3, 4, we got quite a lot of receivers and running backs go, as you would expect. And it's all sort of the big names. Najee Harris went early, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Chubb, Deebo Samuel, AJ Brown, Cooper Kupp, blah, blah, blah. All pretty obvious stuff. So even in a mock draft, people get really excited about youth, right? And they're like, ah, oh, this guy's going to be my starter for 10 years' time at all positions. So that's the thing. And then what happened after the first sort of handful of rounds, you got tight ends come in round 4, round 5. 2, 3, 4 of those guys went, and that's what happened. And a few other edges kicked in. But broadly, all the quarterbacks went, then we're pretty heavy wide receiver and running back for a good few rounds with a few edges and a few tight ends. And then maybe around 8, 9, 10, that's when it started getting a bit more open and a bit more varied.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think that's about right. I mean, there's just going to be less IDP players. I'm sorry, less offensive players that you really want, you know, early on. And I understand getting the top guys because, you know, they're the best and they're easily identifiable. And then, you know, like when you're comparing, I don't know, Harold Landry to Dobbins or something like that, J.K. Dobbins, it's like now you're starting to get into like interesting parts of value and like how are we valuing these two players. You know, so definitely, like you said, picked up around the 10th round and then really like once you get to like the 16th round and on there, it's like pretty much all IDP for the most part.
Yeah, it went really heavy. We'll talk about individual positions, but basically we saw quite a few runs. We saw a few places where normally you get in a draft like this, the first guy at each position will go quite far ahead of everybody else, and we'll talk about who those are and whether that's a good thing. And then you have a little gap, and then a few of them come off the board at the same time. That sort of slightly wider, I don't want to call it tier one, because we've just said somebody went before, but you do see runs go, and you see people panic a little bit and go, ah, this thing, three linebackers come off the field, off the board. I need a linebacker. And that sort of kicks in. And then broadly, it stayed that way for a little bit. Safety started coming in early teens rounds, something like that. You were seeing maybe one or two safeties go a while. And then really defensive backs probably started coming off the board in significant numbers way later, like round 20, late teens. So you were probably getting a decently high-rated defensive back at that point. And then corners way later, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I only drafted one corner. I don't know how many you drafted.
Yeah, nor do I. Yeah, I think I did. I actually stocked up on some cornerbacks later on because I was just thinking best ball. So by the time we got down to like round 46, 47, you know, I've got a pretty solid roster. There's no real obvious guys who are sitting there going, pick me, pick me, pick me, they're stars. So I'm like, yeah, at this point, getting some good corners who I have some faith on the board, I don't think is a terrible idea, because I think you can do really well in a best ball league by having a strong cornerback roster. Because even in fairly serious IDP leagues, people are really bad about cornerback. They don't really know who plays, let alone who's good. And it is a potential advantage over your rivals.
Just talk macro trends. I mean, your first IDP was in round 12. Mine was in round 13. So your first was Shaq Thompson, LB10, 12th round. Sounds like a good time to attack linebacker there. I know. I'll let you explain. I don't know why I'm talking over you, but mine was Von Bell, safety number 4. I took him in the 13th round. So, you know, what do you like, if you remember kind of what made you decide to go with a linebacker, and you're taking a top 12 linebacker here, and you can even, like, you know, I know you're going to talk about true position and how that helps. So that's kind of where I'm pushing you towards. If you,
yeah, great segue. Thanks, buddy. So where I am with true position is linebacker is really picking up a bit of value. So even 12 months ago, I would have sat and waited and waited and waited on linebacker. The problem is, where we are in the NFL now is there are only, we've said this a load of times, but let's just reiterate, there's only around 30 full-time linebackers. And that's not many, right? So in this league, we're starting 36 each and every week. So at least, what's that? 20% of all the starting linebackers are going to be guys who are not even playing every snap. So basically, if you play every snap, you are guaranteed to be a useful player in this league. And I had very strong feeling, because I think people were just starting to pile into linebackers and they were starting to come off the board quite quickly. I wanted to make sure I got a couple of guys who I was really confident with. Because again, I think in this league, if I've got 3, 4, even 5 of those top 30 full-time linebackers, I'm really confident that's going to be an advantage over a lot of teams over the season. So I think those guys have got real value, much more value than they did even a couple of years ago, because true position.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wait a little bit longer just because I'm stuck in my brain, you know, that it's fine to wait on linebacker. And so when I remember, you know, oh, true position, I need to grab some. I was able to pick up a couple that I feel pretty good about, and we can talk about those later. But I fully agree with you. I think linebacker didn't really get hit early enough, I think. I feel like maybe there's some room there. I mean, obviously, let's just go in. We'll just talk about linebacker since we're here. Yeah,
yeah, like, let's talk about it. So, well, before we get into the deep bit, we've got to talk about, so who's the first linebacker off the field? Do you remember when we had a mic on a couple of weeks ago and we talked about the first linebacker, who's clearly going to be the first linebacker in every draft? And he was a little bit surprised that we thought he was going this high. And I think other people are going to be surprised as well. You best get used to it, because he is going to be valued ridiculously.
Yeah, so Michael Parsons, obviously, I think, is, we all kind of know that. He was linebacker 1, 6th round. He went before. I think this is the good way to talk about, you know, value. I think so. He was selected over Terry McLaurin, Mike Evans, Ezekiel Elliott, Michael Pittman, Keenan Allen,
Zeke. Yeah. Right, Micah Parsons is going ahead of Zeke.
So I think, and also right after Max Crosby went DE6, Brian Burns was DE5. Right, so kind of sticks him in that range there where some of these edge guys, a bunch of edges already gone. So we're still talking about that first group of edge guys, first top 12 edge guys, and then Micah Parsons goes. I mean, personally for me, I'll take any of those offensive guys easily over any linebacker in the NFL. Even if you told me he's going to be a top, you know, a top linebacker in the league, I still feel like personally for me, is a replaceable position, even with true position. There's guys to find throughout the year that I would rather have the harder to find offensive players.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have nothing against Micah Parsons. I am not so absolutely convinced he's going to be brilliant. I'm happy to take him 18 picks before the LB2 and 40 picks before you can get other good linebackers. That seems crazy. So let's look at the guy straight after him. So Micah Parsons, oh, here we go. We just said it, went 3 picks ahead of Zeke, right? Mm-hmm. So in the 6th round, you've got Mike Parsons and Zeke going. Let's go down to the 12th round, just randomly. So running back there. Yeah, you've got Michael Carter. And linebacker is Shaq Thompson, who I picked. So do you want Zeke and Shaq Thompson or Michael Carter and
I think that's Parsons? A good way to look at it. I mean, JOK is always a Kimura is right there also. Like, they're all right next to each other, so...
Right, and all of those linebackers have just as much chance of finishing above each other. They're all going to be really close. Now some of those guys will stay healthy and they'll get more sacks and blah, 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 blah. So, fine. Some of them will end up scoring much better. But the chances of any one of them in particular doing it are pretty close. Now, the chances of Michael Carter on the Jets, who's sort of not that good, scoring more than Zeke, who they're paying $30 million to and they have to give all the touches to avoid looking like idiots, very low.
I mean, obviously, I mean, there's a huge difference there, right? So, I agree with you. I think that's definitely an interesting way to look at it, and kind of speaks to that in your draft and how you want to go about it. And just, even within their own position, I mean, Darius Leonard is going to go 6 picks later. I'm sorry, more than that. Almost a full round later. 16 picks later.
Yeah, 66 and 84.
So you can can tell how we're going to feel about that. And like, Darius Leonard's been the LB1 or an LB2 multiple times, and has looked just incredible. So that in and of itself, I think, speaks to, you know, kind of when to pull that seal. I mean, personally, I didn't take a linebacker pretty far down there. I mean, I know we'd mentioned you took one in the 12th round, and you know, I still, even in the 12th round, like, I mean, there's offensive players I'd rather have. So among them, you know, Darius Leonard goes in the seventh round.
Well, you know what? I was really surprised here. I was absolutely certain that Micah Parsons would be the first linebacker, and then pretty sure that Darius Leonard and Devin White would be pretty close as number 2 and 3. Interestingly, Devin White was only the LB5? Yeah, so he went after Roquan. People love Roquan, fair enough. And then this one blows my mind. I think it's hilarious. Foye Oluokun, who is not very good, who scored really well as an IDP last year because he played 1,140 snaps. And is a free agent.
He's a free agent.
Now, I'm no Devin White fan, but a look on that high is... Ooh, that smacks of... He scored well last year, so I think he's going to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these picks are going to happen. I mean, these things... I mean, I have a friend who... We played redraft for like 10 years. I think for the first 8 drafts, he took Aaron Rodgers in the first round in a 1 quarterback league. Just because that's the one thing he knew how to do, you know? So I think, you know, these things do happen. So it's not crazy outside the realm of possibility, right? So it's interesting to kind of be able to swoop in and kind of take advantage of that. And even like, even.
Yeah. And it's a mock. There's no money.
Exactly.
You're changing hands, right? So people are going to be a little bit faster at least.
So again, Devin White, you know, about 30 picks later than Michael Parsons. Yeah. Yeah, I want that.
And last year, right, Devin White was going 2.5 rounds ahead of any other linebackers. People are like, he's going to get 10 sacks every year. Which, I mean, welcome to Micah Parsons. He's not going to get 14 sacks every year. It's not going to happen.
All right, how else should we approach this positionally?
Let's talk about some of the guys who drop. I want to talk about age here, because age is obviously a thing. In real drafts and mock drafts this time of year, people are going to be like, no, this guy is over 28. I'm not touching him. This guy is 22. He's going to be amazing for years. That's not the case. We know that IDP careers are much shorter than you think, and we know their year-on-year variability is much higher than we think. So Bobby Wagner, the great Bobby Wagner, one of the two best linebackers of the last 10 years, pretty easily went to LB14 here, just after Deion Jones, who had an absolutely horrific year, and ahead of Isaiah Simmons, or very close to Isaiah Simmons, a handful of picks inside him, who's rubbish. That felt really late for a good veteran like him. And there's
I think we're fortunate guys. That Vontae David, Deion Jones, by Wagner, all within, you know, 10 picks of each other. I think that really shows, like, this is the oldie but goodie, you know, kind of field there, and like they're still in the, you know, right outside the top 12. So I think that was nice. I mean, obviously, everyone's the sexy new thing. You know, JOK goes before them, Logan Wilson goes before them, Jordan Brooks way before them. Somehow Eric Kendricks got pushed way up there, which, you know, I like to see, but I agree. I think that's actually a really interesting point to make, because, like, you kind of know that Bobby Wagner, Deion Jones, Devonta David have good seasons in them still. Like, you don't know how many are left, right? So there's, like, obviously, Devonta David's not going to be your LB1 in 5 years, but you know that you're gonna get for sure production from them next year and maybe the year after. So I kind of don't mind taking that in the 13th round, maybe as your LB, your first linebacker, and then kind of, you know, hitting it later because of the best ball, because of the stability there. You don't have to go and spend all this value in the 8th round, the 10th round. You know, you're gonna get something reliable. Yeah, it's older. Yeah, they're not gonna be around forever. But how many linebackers are entering the league every year that you're gonna be able to replace that position pretty quickly? So I think that's actually a really interesting part that they all went together. I mean, CJ Mosley goes back about 8 or 9 picks after that group as well. Yeah. Similar situation. I really like to see that grouping together because it's like I can target that now. I can say, oh, you know, like I need a linebacker. I want someone reliable. Let me start looking at these guys.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I think just after that as well is probably the sweet spot. So you got like LB17. We had Tremaine Edmonds, then Blake Martinez, Cole Holcomb, Bobby Okeh, TJ Edwards. You picked up, really like that. Devondre Campbell. What's striking me now that I look at it is you run out of players you want to draft really early. So I talk about there being 30 guys, but Matt Milano's LB25. And then LB26, Jerome Baker, Patrick Queen, Alex Singleton, Devin Bush. I don't feel confident about any of those guys. And they're going in round 19, round 20, right? So I think the sweet spot here, you are saying to me round 12 a little bit high, and I'm fine. I buy that. It might have been a little bit early, but if you're taking guys outside of round 20, there are guys I feel okay there. Demario Davis is there. Jamin Davis. A few people who I think are good bets. Dre Greenlaw a bit later. But there's a lot of dross after that round 20 as well. There's really only 25 guys you feel properly confident about drafting.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it as well. You know, like, this is when things start to dry up. I mean, then again, like, you know, Patrick Queen, 226 overall. You know, I thought that was a good pick. Seeing, you know, kind of the Pete Warners, the Miles Gay.
Yeah. He's okay.
Willie Gay, I should say.
Yeah, he's fine there. It's decent value. But it depends how you've got him, right? If he's your first or your second linebacker that you've picked at that point, okay, you've got good value for who he is, but are you confident you can have three good linebackers every week if he's one of the top two you're picking? Probably not, because you're just not going to find another two or three better guys than that later on.
I mean, I will say, picking Miles Jack, LB34, 21st round, I was like, I was so happy. I was like, this. I remember drafting, I was like, this is sweet. And no one's ever said that before about Miles Jack.
Do you think he gets cut?
Probably.
Right. I mean, there's a decent chance he gets cut. But if he stays on the roster, I actually quite like him.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I picked up a ton of value. I mean, Jordan Hicks, LB47, 28th round. Love that. Leighton Vander Esch, who they're probably going to keep around for another year. You know, obviously not full-time player, but plays plenty. LB55, love that. We're talking best ball, right? So it makes it a little bit...
There's loads of value. They're all good bets, but none of those guys go, I'm very certain he's got a proper good role next year. They're all people you feel it's worth the gamble at that point. And that's fine, but you need some certainty when you have to start three of these guys every week, and there's not enough to get around.
Again, like, you know, if you're not as comfortable, you know, waiting a long time, like, higher up, I mean, like the old player tier, I thought that's a really good spot, like I mentioned already. But, you know, picking up Blake Martinez, who you mentioned, LB18, like, he's had so many good years, and you know, that's someone that you're probably more familiar with, and you've waited until the 15th round to be able to draft him. So I think that's a good bet as well.
Yeah, I was quite pleased Nick Bolton didn't go too high. I think in real drafts he is going to go much higher than this. He's what, LB32 there? I'm okay with him at LB32. I'm just not okay with him at LB18 or whatever that he's actually going to go.
Anybody else that you kind of were surprised was sitting there or drafted at a certain point before we move on?
I don't know. So some late guys, let's flick through here. I like Monty Rice, down the 28th round. So Titans haven't got any linebackers at the moment. You know, David Long and Monty Rice might be the guys. So I like that value. LVE that you said, yeah, that makes sense. Who else we got? Oh, it's a bit ropey, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Corey Littleton was LV79.
Yeah, Corey Littleton is super late. And Van Noy as well. So Kyle Van Noy down a, whatever it is, LB a million. LB 74. Yeah, I'm confident that Kyle Van Noy is probably going to have five or six decent weeks next year. Now, you don't know when they're going to be. So in a start-sit league, terrible. In getting an LB 6 in best ball, yes, please. Yeah.
And that's I mean, I do agree. Like, I really feel like best ball is the best way to play. I mean, I obviously a lot of people who've been playing fantasy football for 20 years are screaming. But... Mm-hmm. You know, things change. You're wearing seatbelts now. Be happy.
All right. Should we move on to talk about different positions? Should we talk about edge? Absolutely. If that's the next sexiest.
Let's do it.
All right. So who was first edge off the board?
So like I said, like there was a little confusion at the start, but I don't think it matters, especially when you're looking in the position like we're doing now. So Myles Garrett, I'll just run through the top five. Myles Garrett, Nick Bosa, TJ Watt, Chase Young, Brian Byrne. So TJ Watt's really the only one who's normally be a linebacker. So it's awesome to be able to put him in here. I mean, that's enough. Just done. True position's better. You know what I mean? That's there. I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about that grouping? I feel like it's really hard not to put TJ Watt at the top just because of, you know, sack records and how dominant he is. And the best ball helps him get away from those dud weeks.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know my stance. I'm never going to draft the top guy. If I have to rank them... Yeah, any order. I'm just going to draft the lowest one of those and let someone else take them. So those top five, I'm sort of okay with it. Top three I really like. Really cool. Chase Young just gets boosted up because he's young. No pun intended. Brian Burns, people really like. He's a sack artist, really good in best ball. Fine with that. I think the best value is Joey Bosa, who went a few rounds later. So if you get Joey Bosa as the, blah, 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 what's he, eighth edge? Yes, please. I think it's great.
Yeah, and again, like I was happy to see Chase Young up there, just because I feel like he's kind of been a little bit forgotten about just because of the injury and, you know, the missed time. So I was happy to see him there. I think that's right about where he should be. Again, and the only one that's of that group, Max Crosby, went sixth. That I didn't feel so warm and fuzzy about, especially over Daniel Hunter, Joey Bosa, and
it's it's a gamble on him for sure. Let's do the same thing we did before. So we got Chase Young, who went in third round. Your mileage may vary. And he's gone in between Kirk Cousins and Justin Field. And then down the seventh round, we've got Danielle Hunter and Joey Bosa, who went next to Carson Wentz. So would you rather have Danielle Hunter and Justin Fields? Or would you rather have Chase Young and Carson Wentz?
I'd rather have...
It's not close, right? Because the edge guys are fairly similar, and the quarterbacks are not similar at all. So,
yeah. And then the next tier there, really kind of an interesting one. I think I skip on the Harold Landry, Shaq Barrett, Alex Highsmith group to get down to the Trey Hendrickson, Marcus Davenport. Just to kind of give you the lowdown there, Harold Landry and Shaq Barrett, eighth and 10th round, Hendrickson and Davenport, and both in the 11th round, one pick apart. So, love that. Yeah, love
Rashan
that
Gary.
Too.
I love Rashan Gary.
Those three went back to back range as well. Awesome.
Because, Marcus Davenport and Rashan Gary and Trey Hendrickson, you're bang on, are all perfect for this because they are pure speed rushers.
Yeah, absolutely. And the best ball is so nice for them. That helps a lot.
So, some interesting players a bit lower than that. Let's talk about age. So, Jalen Phillips went at the top of the 13th and Khalil Mack went at the bottom of the 14th. That is obviously ridiculous because Jalen Phillips, fine. He was a rookie last year, but he's never going to be as good as Khalil Mack is, even though he's old and not quite the guy he used to be. He's still going to be better in the short term and probably in the long term. But okay, I can see when that happens. And then you got Kwity Paye comes in, who we like with a bit of potential. Hassan Reddick, free agent, weird numbers. Montez Sweat, I quite like.
Good value there in the 16th.
And then there's sort of a really long, fat tier there, right? So we talked about those elite guys, and there's a few other people being stirred in with them. You might like them a bit more, you might like them less. But then there's a long, long tier of all pretty good guys. So down in the 22nd round, as Edge 33, you've got Yannick Ngakoue. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Chandler Jones, and then you've got JJ Watt. And they're all really good edge rushers, and they're going to be really effective and give you a lot of weeks. So the fact they're all going after the likes of DJ Wonnum, Julian Aquara, Carl Lawson, yeah, you can wait.
Yeah, I think the ADP here kind of started to work against, the MFL ADP started to work against people when you have Julian Aquara and Romeo Aquara going before Josh Sweat, Von Miller, Odafe Owe, who somehow is still Jason Owe. I don't know how that happened, but and JPP, you know, JPP in the 29th round. Yeah, he's old, but like, that's fine for a startup if you're trying to win. Yeah, absolutely.
You're taken there, right? It's just so deep. Edge is so deep at the moment. There is a lot of very good players. And similar to wide receiver, was amazingly deep in this draft. At certain positions, you go, oh, we talked about linebacker, we talked about quarterback. If you haven't got them, you haven't got them. And sure, you can try and patch it up and find some guys here and there, but you're going to be behind the eight ball. And at edge and wide receiver, you can easily take the 30th, 40th guy off the board, and you go, yeah, he's pretty decent. I'm happy with that. As long as he's not stupid, and you're not drafting, you know, some of these bad guys ahead of really good players, then...
Yeah, I think, like, with the best ball, it helps too, right? I like to be super deep at the edge group because they're so variable week to week, you know? So it's a good position if you're playing best ball. Even regular, you want to have options, right? It's a good position to be, like, really deep at because you're going to need those big weeks to kind of carry you versus other teams. So that's really just, like, the one position where... You know, I think I was the deepest linebacker. I was next, but you know, definitely a position I really wanted to hammer at.
Who were you surprised with that slid late? Who went way? Yeah, after I mean, they would?
I drafted them, but I thought Joshua and Von Miller were two that because you know,
Von Miller
for sure, way late for him there. Again, we kind of touched on them already, but like TJ Watt, like those groupings, I thought they maybe went a little late. I mean, those guys are really good still. So to take like Jonathan Greenard over them, DJ Wunnum over them, it's just painful for me. Matt Judon even, like, I'd rather have the more sure thing, even though they're older. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, even like Derek Barnett, who I don't like. But he, you know, 39th round, I thought he's someone who has value over Arik Armstead, you know, so that's kind of someone else.
Yeah. Derek Barnett did just go slightly ahead of Marcus Golden and Frank Clark, though. And, you know, I'm no Frank Clark fan at all. But those guys get sacks, and Derek Barnett never has since he...
But again, right, I really think that the NFL ADP was kind of working against, because some of these late round guys, you're like, wait, what? Like Bud Dupree, 45th round, I feel like he should go a little higher than that, even though didn't have a good year.
Yeah, I mean, he's gone after Kamoko Touré, right? And okay, the setting sort of shine on Kamoko Touré here because he is that guy that can get sacks on a few snaps, but you don't want to carry him on your roster all year next year. He's probably not going to be worth it. All right, should we talk about defensive interior? Because that's really interesting, and it's really, really easy to tell the story of it. So, broadly... Aaron Donald went in the first round because Aaron Donald is an absolute stud and the Rams just run the Super Bowl and blah, 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 blah. He's the most reliable guy. So that makes sense. So he went at the 9th pick overall. The next interior player was Quinnen Williams, who went at the 97th pick. So 88 picks. That is quite the gap between number one and
10
number
times
two
as valuable.
I mean, yeah, that's mad. Look, but the weird thing is it sort of might be worth it. I don't look at that and go, I totally hate it. Okay, it's earlier than I would have taken him. I'd much rather have a quarterback at that point, given what the draft looks like, even one of the stud wide receivers. But should Aaron Donald be taken several rounds ahead of Quinnen Williams, Jeffrey Simmons, DeForest Buckner? Yeah, I think he probably should.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he should be, I mean, overall, just like looking at the overall group, like I feel like maybe I'd take him after a lot of the quarterbacks. Like I feel like he's similar to a quarterback because like there's only one, you know, Lamar Jackson, right? There's only one Aaron Donald. And that does give you a positional advantage, but not that much. So I think I'd rather see him more kind of like after, closer to the more like the running backs, kind of where they were going. But, I mean, you're getting a player who every year is probably a top 12 player. I mean, just overall, positionless, you know, he's going to be really good.
He's the most sure thing in the NFL. In terms of trusting a player.
Yeah, I think so. I would put him and, like, Patrick Mahomes. Like, those are the two players who you can unequivocally say, barring injury, they're going to be really good for fantasy. So I agree. Yeah. I agree. And that maybe he should be closer to Patrick Mahomes then in that way, because he's the best of the position. And, like, you can get other quarterbacks. You know, you really can't get another Aaron Donald. So, yeah.
Right. And there's a steep drop-off at defensive tackle as well. There's, you know, you can't make do with depth like you can in other positions. So you and me are never going to get Aaron Donald, right? Because we're just not going to draft from that point. However, the interesting thing here, I've slightly looked like I've got egg on my face in Aaron Donald this year, because I was a couple of points in this year going, it might be worth selling Aaron Donald. He's getting older, blah, 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 blah. I'm not sure he's going to have the same insane value next year. And okay, he had a brilliant year. He was clearly the best defensive player in the league. And I can see how people would go, you idiot, what a numpty thing to say. However, I still remain convinced in every single league there is somebody that will go, yeah, Aaron Donald needs to be taken 8 rounds ahead of all the other interior defensive players because he's that damn good. And if you can get that guy to pay up for it, to the equivalent sort of startup cost that we're talking about here, I sell him every day.
I'm looking at the list right now. So, I'm looking at where he was drafted and people went after him. I mean, I'm taking a lot of, I'm going like 3-4 rounds before I'm like, feel like I'm ready to draft Aaron Donald.
Well, let's do the comparison here. So he's gone in between Justin Herbert and Kyler Murray, right? So basically, you're getting a really young, really talented, really good quarterback who's got legs and can run and is going to give you all those points. And then we've got Quinny Williams, Jeffrey Simmons, basically went in the same place, and DeForest Buckner, all of them in the 9th round, and Jimmy Garoppolo. So, okay, Aaron Donald's a lot better than Jeffrey Simmons is, but the difference between Jimmy G and one of those quarterbacks, Justin Herbert...
I mean, even you use wide receiver, Devonta Smith, Elijah Moore, not Elijah Moore, Allen Robinson, or Justin Jefferson, you know, and Aaron Donald. Like, I'm taking Justin Jefferson over him, I'm taking CeeDee Lamb, I'm taking Tyreek Hill, maybe even Jalen Waddle. I mean, I'm going... Just because you can't... It's so hard with the... With the defensive player, the players to like really feel that good about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're flogging a dead horse here, but I think we've made our point that.
Well, I know beating a dead horse, but I think that you don't usually use a lot of British but losing flogging.
So there's a great joke. It goes, "I am an insomniac, bestiliac, necrophile." Am I flogging a dead horse? It's joke time with TK here. Do you know what the best thing about living in Switzerland is? Well, the flag's a big plus.
That's like a refined dad joke.
Should we talk about defense? Yeah. I'm a dad. I tell dad really jokes. That's my thing.
All right.
All right.
So we'll go down. I mean, again, like, I didn't take one until 23rd round. You didn't take one until 29th round. So definitely a position we've kind of
figured out. Yeah, boy. Yeah, and I didn't like that, actually. I kept meaning to take one, and I'm pretty uncomfortable with waiting that long. So my first guy was David Onyemata of the Saints, who was obviously suspended for 6 games last year, but was really good because he's a really good player and he's one of the top 10 best interior rushers in the NFL. So I'm fine with that, but it starts getting a bit ropey down there.
Yeah, it gets pretty bad.
Frankly, outside the top 10 of them, I'm not feeling comfortable. So let's run down. Aaron Donald, all right, out on his own. And then you've got a second tier, which is basically Quinny Williams, because he's young, even though, frankly, he's not very good. He's played, what, 3 years? He's had 2 bad years and 1 sort of okay one, so a bit worried. Jeffrey Simmons, who's really good, like that. DeForest Buckner, really good, like that. Chris Jones, really like that. That's the tier for me. So the next guy who was quite close is Christian Wilkins, but I think the difference between Chris Jones and Christian Wilkins is significant, depending on your scoring settings. If you're not quite so sack-heavy, Wilkins is useful. But the difference between Chris Jones, premier rusher, and Christian Wilkins, Jonathan Allen, and Cam Haywood, because he's old, seems significant. And then after that, you've got Christian Barmore, who had a good, underrated rookie season. I thought he was excellent last year. But, you know, he's not Aaron Jones. He's never going to be. And then Deron Payne, and Leonard Williams, and Kenny Clark, and Javon Hargrave. They're all fine. Yeah.
I mean, I like Kenny Clark in 17th round over Payne and Barmore and maybe Hayward too. Jonathan Allen. I like the.
You sound like Painbot from the Teen Titans.
I like that down there. I'm fine with like the top group and where they went. I think that's pretty good there. So it gets scary. I mean, I took Ed Oliver in the 23rd round, and I'm happy to have Ed Oliver over Chris Wormley. But
I like that. Yeah, I thought it was a good pick.
After that, I mean, it is brutal. Grady Jarrett, you know, maybe there's a bit of a turnaround there. A lot of names I don't even know, like Aleem McNeil. Didn't really know that guy.
You loved Aleem McNeil when the Lions drafted him in the second round last year. Oh, no, you liked the other guy.
Oh, yeah.
Levi Onwuzurike, didn't you?
Yep, good old 44th round Levi Onwuzurike. When that came across my email, I was like, damn it. Because I would have liked to have had him.
So just look at this. Chris Wormley got drafted ahead of Stephon Tuitt of the Steelers. So, you know, good luck with that, because Tuitt missed the whole of last year, and he's clearly a much better player. By the way, John Franklin Myers is still a defensive tackle on here, so that needs to be sorted out.
Talk to PFF.
Yeah,
so, I mean, then I took a bunch of guys later. You know, it's a bit of a weird position. Like, obviously, it's kind of hard to kind of nail these guys down. So, I totally am cool with taking someone in the ninth round early on and, you know, kind of in that area and just feeling really good about at least one guy. You need three, which in my best ball settings, I only have two. So, I'm not as painful as Tom is.
Yep. Yeah, it's tricky. Having three guys out there every week is certainly going to test your depth. So, I quite like some of these guys that went later who are better interior players in more balanced pass rush tackle systems. So we talked about Christian Wilkins. I mean, that was under the old Patriots-like system, so we'll see what happens. Coordinators in place, but they're going to change that defense. Then Lawrence Guy, Rasheem Green, Vita Vea, Devon Godshaw, Dean Lowry. I like Dean Lowry later. If you're scoring rewards those guys, and it may well do, that might be useful. The problem is, in a mock draft and a startup, mostly people aren't going to look at defensive interior scoring. They're just going to assume it's sack heavy, and they're going to go for all the pass rushers and then just sort of take
right exactly and then just for the best ball, you know, kind of help those a little bit as well. All right, so let's move on to safety, because somehow this became a very long episode and I don't know how when that happened, so we'll move on to safety here. It's good. People love to hear it. Now for safety,
We've only got defensive backs anyway. We're rushing.
Yeah. So for me, I look at safety as in true position as even worse than linebacker. I mean, there are very few guys that I feel very comfortable with, and I'm totally cool with drafting them early. I think they went pretty late. I kept checking safety every single time it was my turn. I'm like, let me look at safety, and the same guys were there. So I was kind of like, okay, I'm gonna keep waiting because I like to have the last guy in the tier if possible. I'm not going to be the first one to take him. So Derwin James goes in the 10th round. He was kind of the first of the group to kind of pull that thing. And I feel like that felt like a good value. I mean, he goes two picks before Travis Etienne, similar to Chris Jones. I feel like that's really good. I mean, it's basically like taking, you know, Darius Leonard, you know, in a way. So to get that similar level of IDP production, you know, three rounds later, about is pretty cool, I think.
All right, he's Derwin James. You're going to be really happy having Derwin James on your roster because he's just great and he's great fun. So, is it the best value? No. Can I begrudge anyone drafting Derwin James because they love him? Also, no.
Yep. So the first grouping was Derwin James, 10th round. Buda Baker, Jeremy Chinn. Buda Baker, end of the 11th. Jeremy Chinn, top of the 12th. And I took Von Bell as my first. I think it was my first IDP. In the 13th round. So I was like, well, let me get one of the good guys here before everyone's gone, because I want no part of Jesse Bates, Anton Winfield, Jalen Thompson, Xavier McKinney. No part of that. So that's kind of how I approached it.
Well, those guys are right. It's just so unpredictable, right? In IDP, we laugh at cornerback and go, oh, you can't predict it. It's going to be different guys every year. And that is totally right. But safety's the same. It's so unpredictable. So even here, we've got Derwin James, right? Who's played 4 years in the league and basically been injured and not scored well 2 years. You've got Buda Baker and Jeremy Chinn that then came off the board, who are both coming off really disappointing, frankly, quite bad years as IDPs. And those are your top three guys. I mean, you and me love Von Bell, so okay, I get that. And then we've got Justin Simmons, the fifth safety, who plays in a two-high left-right safety system and will under the new defensive coordinator as well. He's been really valued because he's a good player and he's played a lot over the past 3, 4, 5 years. Yeah, is he inherently a better IDP than the rest of the guys? No, absolutely not. So I still love waiting for this. And okay, it means you're probably going to be stuck with a couple of guys who are not ideal.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, Minka Fitzpatrick was top scoring safety in IDP last year, and none of us thought that would happen. That's just the sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I kept hitting safety because I felt like it was a position that is way less deep than others. So the next grouping right there, I took Harrison Smith in the 19th round and Jordan Poyer in the 22nd round, which I was super happy about. I think I'd rather wait. If I didn't take a Von Bell, I'm waiting until there and kind of going after Jonathan Abrams, Landon Collins, Minka Fitzpatrick, how you mentioned. So, you know, Jamal Adams. I mean, we don't even talk about Jamal Adams. I think that was just a straight up, you know, we missed it. Yeah,
he's got missed because his ADP is low, and yeah, and he got injured. So,
yeah, absolutely. So we'll probably see him higher in that second grouping there, and that'll make it feel a little bit better.
Yeah, he'll move around, but you can still wait, yep, right? So you took Von Bell in 13th round, and we've talked about that. We're okay with it. But if you hadn't taken any safety at all, and you'd ignored the top 20 to come off the board, you could have ended up with Jamal Adams. Okay, fine, it's not going to happen everywhere. And then Jordan Fuller. And then Adrian Amos, and then Terrell Edmonds, down in the 25th, 26th round. And those guys, that is a really solid start to your safety position. I'm absolutely fine.
Yeah, I'm cool with it too. I think there was a lot of safeties going. I felt like I'd prefer to have the top grouping just because we have no idea what is going to happen at safety at any year, right? I mean, obviously Jamal Adams doesn't really count, but Adrian Amos, we were all super in for this year, and we're just kind of meh, and Terrell Edmonds as well, and some of these guys, so... Yeah, it's a mess, but definitely a position that I don't feel like it's as deep as some of the others, especially edge. Edge and compared to safety, I mean, I'm taking safety a little bit earlier.
Okay. I disagree with you, but, you know, there's plenty of room for that. So some of the guys who went really late, there's some really interesting ones here. So I am very interested in whoever plays strong safety for the Colts this year.
Mm-hmm.
Very interested, because Gus Bradley's taken over and you know, it's such an important role in his defense, the Cam Chancellor role, blah, blah, blah. He made Jonathan Abrams look good last year. So whoever wins that spot is going to be a stud. Now, Kari Willis is the obvious person on the roster at the moment. They'll probably get someone else in. They'll probably draft someone anyway. But Kari Willis now as the safety number, what is he, 43? Yeah, great bet. I love that. Similarly, Talanoa Hufanga going a bit later than that. There's really good talent really late on. Ronnie Harrison. I'm no Ronnie Harrison fan, but he's basically going to the number 50 safety. Yes, please.
Yeah, I feel like they're good names and they will play, but like identifying that top group becomes impossible. So, you know, I think there's good picks here. I mean, I took some picks, Devin McCourty, 48th round. I like Andrew Wingard. I was like, screw it, whatever. You know, Mike Hyde could have something going on, and you know, Ronnie Harrison again. Like, I feel like there's good names here, but it's just identifying who those, getting a top guy here is just totally useless. So I punted a little bit.
Yeah. Divine Diablo, by the way, currently a safety on MFL. And I feel more confident about him playing linebacker for the Raiders than probably any other Raiders. So love that one.
Nice.
So where I'm looking at, the way we set this league up, again, that's not going to be the same in every league. I feel there are positions where we want to build a deep core and are positions where we want to have good starters. And linebackers is a starter one for me. Edge and cornerback are roster positions, if you know what I mean. And safety is in that one as well. So I want to come out of a draft like this with probably 5-6 safeties I can feel really comfortable about, and they're just going to be very solid all year. I can set and forget. Don't worry about the position.
Yeah.
I don't care which ones they are. I'm fine if they are safeties 25 to
30. Actually, I mean, I agree with that sentiment. You know, I feel like I want to have a strong core of safety and then sort of let the best ball do its thing. Pick of the litter. Just because they do vary week to week so strongly. I mean, obviously you get that in other positions as well, but it seems a little bit softer towards the back end.
Yep. All right. I'll buy that. Let's talk about cornerback. pretty quickly. So a couple of really interesting things. So firstly, Kenny Moore was top cornerback off the board in 20th round. Okay, I'll get that. He had a lot of tackles last year, like a lot of tackles. But there's always one cornerback who has a lot more tackles than everybody else. It's rarely the same guy. I was most surprised that Trevon Diggs wasn't one of the top two corners taken. Now, he came off as the fifth corner, which is hardly low, but I thought everyone was going to be like, Trevon Diggs, interceptions, best ball, he's such a stud. And it didn't quite happen.
Yep, I agree with you there. I mean, the 20th round, you know, I think that's okay to start going for corner. It's just really, really hard to identify anything good here or bad or up or down or anything like that. And, like, honestly, like, going for the Marlon Humphrey, Marshawn Lattimore, Jalen Ramsey, the 26th round, let's just call it, like, early 26th round, I'm cool with that. I mean, these are players you know are going to play. They're going to get some targets, either whether they're playing well this year or not, because some of these guys have had really good years and really bad years. I think just being able to identify the players who are going to be on the field is, like, the best you can hope for. You know what I mean? And AJ Terrell falls into that. Trayvon Diggs probably does too now. But someone like Kenny Moore, Bryce Hall, Legarius Sneed, like, they played well last year, but you don't know that they're going to play. I mean, they could revamp their entire corner situation in Kansas City because they were so terrible that these guys aren't playing anymore. So I think I see the value in a startup of going for sure things. Personally, for me, you know, I didn't take a corner until the 47th round because I know Avante Maddox is going to be on the team next year. You know, so it's a little bit for me, like, I'm not good enough to be able to identify who's going to play next year besides a couple names. So I'm just going to totally step back from it.
Yeah, I see it both ways. And in most leagues, I think you're right. And it's just not worth investing at all because there's going to be so many good guys sitting on waivers and you can find full-time players every week, no problem. Where I am with this one is we're basically going to start three corners per team, 12 teams, so 36, right? And there are somewhere between 60 and 90 starting cornerbacks in the league. So if every team in this league has six starting cornerbacks, then they're still starters, people who play every single snap, left on waivers. So you should be able to have five or six guys and not mess about. Now, obviously, you're going to make some mistakes and you're going to pick some guys who aren't those guaranteed starters and you'll spend the first few weeks messing about. But is there really an opportunity to have a good core of starters when other people don't have them? Probably not. So is it worth investing several rounds before anybody else? Probably not. And we should talk about this, right? So out of the first two cornerbacks taken in the 20th and 21st round were by the same person. And in most leagues, you're going to have one or two guys who think cornerback is more important. You know, there's always someone that sort of wants to fill their starting spots on the roster. And out of the seven drafted, another team took four out of those first seven. So out of those seven first cornerbacks off the board, six of them were just to two teams. So clearly, a couple of guys went, you know, I just want cornerback. I think it's a big thing. I think that's a point of difference. And they loaded up on them. It's not that everybody started drafting cornerback early. It's a couple of people did.
I 100% agree with you. And of course, it's a mock draft, right? So you're getting some of that and also some of it to ignore. But for me, like, I feel like looking at the bottom of the list, I feel just as good about Jace Horn and Shaq Griffin and Desmond King as I do about, you know, guys drafted 15 rounds ahead of them. You know what I mean? So,
well, Darius Slay is down there. I mean, frankly, you took Avante Maddox over Darius Slay in a best ball league. I think I'd give me big play Slay. But yes, I'm more comfortable with the guys at the top, but not massively.
Yeah, and you know, they weren't too far apart, and you know, you'd hope Slay was kind of been more of a don't target guy.
Yeah, I think there's value in the middle. So I took Xavien Howard. He was the first corner I took, and he was cornerback 14 in the 32nd round. And because he's a cornerback who gets his hands to the ball, and that's sort of what I want. And then you got Marcus Peters, another ball-playing cornerback who went at the cornerback 18. If you go out on a limb for those two guys, I'm okay with that. I agree. Think that's good. So Taron Johnson, really interesting. So we talk about one cornerback getting all the tackles every year, right? It was Kenny Moore this year. Last year it was Taron Johnson, the Bills' slot corner, who had a ridiculous number of tackles. And he was going pretty early this year, and he got taken as cornerback 27 here. So it just goes to show, you know, like, oh, I've got to get Kenny Moore. He tackles all the time. But who wants Teron Johnson? He's old news. Same guy. Same guy.
Yuck. Too much corner.
All right. We should probably wrap it up, shouldn't we? Yeah, we've talked about it. Anyway, look, hopefully that was really interesting. We've talked about different profiles and availability curves of the different players. That is the most important thing. It's really important to look at picks and go, who is the best player on the board right now? But also, it's really important to look through drafts and data like this. And we'll probably put a link to it in the show notes and go, look, it's not, can I get this guy in the seventh round versus this guy in the ninth round or whatever? It's who is the alternative as well. So I love that example we showed with Carson Wentz and Justin Fields. That was a great example. It is always the combination of different positions that you can take, and that's where value is. So it's really important to know what you value and how you value it, but also how other players are valuing teams as well. So I would strongly recommend sit down here and go, look, do you want one of those top 5, 6, 7 edges? Do you want to invest in Aaron Donald or a tier one defensive tackle? Do you want a top 5 safety like Sticky, or do you not want to bother like me? And just try and make those decisions before you get into the heat of battle, or at least do some mocks so you're used to making those decisions before you do it for real. And that will really help you make better decisions when you're on the clock.
Yeah, good fun, and you know, right, check out the
article. Yeah, it's good fun. Right, we need to go and watch Combine because, you know, I want to watch a load of fat guys do 3 cone drills. That's super useful. All right, dead air. Sticky, what are you working on at the moment, buddy?
Just working on my rookie ranks and also working on the post-Combine article. So take a look, keep your eye out for that. It'll be illuminating, I'm sure.
Saucy, like it. I built first projection model this week, so I might share that at some point. And I am posting division previews as well, so we're trying to talk about what might happen in the off season for every team, which could give you a good idea of which players you can invest in and which ones are not so safe. Anyway, that's it. We have been the Read and React. As always, we appreciate your time and your attention and frankly your tolerance looking to us banging on about things that we care about, especially cornerbacks an hour deep in. So congratulations if you made it all the way through. Thank you very much, and have a brilliant week. Enjoy the Combine. Don't listen to us grouchy old men complain about it. I hope it's wonderful. Cheerio.